This is CliffCentral.com.
We're going to host an unconventional version of the Burning Platform this morning. Of course, the Burning Platform is always brought to you by Nando's. And this morning, Burning Platform, a very special guest, someone whom I have heard commentate in various ways and shapes and forms. He certainly knows a lot more about some of the political goings-on than he will admit to. He seems preternaturally gifted in that respect. And I'm delighted he could join us on the Experience Friday, a particularly irregular one, Mr. Canthan Pillay. But thank you so much for making yourself available. You are someone who does pay attention to what's going on. You're a South African who cares about, you know, the basics of society working, like anyone with a brain. And you have a couple of stories that I also have a couple of stories I want to ask you about, but the primary ones this week in terms of the news that I'm interested in discussing with you this morning, I mean, it's ongoing, the state capture thing. We're not going to talk about that unless you want to. But the SABC, again, you know, we talk about media, and you have a background in media. What do you think of the SABC and the law is going to be followed to the letter in terms of retrenchments? Do you believe that?
Well, I think the issue that we've got is that Claudi, in his infinite wisdom, completely bypassed the law in terms of how he filled positions. So if you look at the mess that they've got right now, what's very clear is that they've hired bucket loads of people, just bypassing process and giving them hefty salaries. So naturally, the corporation is going to collapse as a direct result.
Yeah.
So going through undoing that entire mess is going to, it has to mean retrenchments, because you can't have a situation where that corporation is just giving these guys sheltered employment, no matter what Claudi may think of it.
Yeah, I heard that the salary bill was grossly excessive in terms of the total amount of revenue and expenditure.
Well, you see, the other issue that we've got is that their business model right now is pretty stuffed, on the basis that, look, effectively they have a couple of cash cows at the place. Metro FM is clearly a cash cow. Mm-hmm. 5 FM is clearly a cash cow. SABC 3 is a cash cow. SABC 2 to some extent still makes money. Mm-hmm. But if you look in terms of the ALS platforms, the African language stations,
right,
they have massive listenership, but they don't really generate the type of revenue that's needed to keep them in business. But there's a disproportionate amount of money that gets funneled into those channels. And I think obviously there's the state capture hook there, that is the single biggest platform for reaching the masses in this country. So I think the quick and easy way that they can actually get themselves out of the mess is sell off Metro FM, sell off 5 FM. I'm sure that there's lots of private interests who will be happy to take care of those platforms, because they don't really serve a public broadcasting mandate. And then take that money and put it into resurrecting, you know, the other sort of touchy-feely stuff about, you know, what government is doing to fix the toilets.
Being just a little bit cynical there, so I'm with you. I know what you mean. Now, the other thing that happened this week is that everybody went to the UN. Trump was at the UN. Cyril was at the UN. Did you learn anything? Did we garner any new information?
Trump is always, you know, I love watching the guy. He is so...
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Just from the point of view of providing entertainment. And you know that at the other end of the line, there are all of these people around the world who are waiting on Twitter to say, did you see what he just said?
Yeah.
Can you believe this guy? It's like a Mexican wave of outrage that travels around the world of every sentence that the guy has.
Well, yeah, and it seems disproportionate to how much he's done wrong, provably wrong, you know. We'll go down that rabbit hole another time. But the UN speeches are usually not really that interesting. I believe Trump said some things about Venezuela.
Yes, he kind of hinted that he wouldn't be unhappy with regime change happening in that part of the world. And it is the kind of stuff that Trump does basically throwing out the rule book. If you remember the early days in terms of dealing with Kim in North Korea, again, he used to say stuff that was very similar along the lines of, what did he call him? A small man? Or I forget. He changes his tune every so often. But he sets up the bluster up front.
Right.
And then, negotiates backwards from there. And it generally seems to have worked very well for him in so many other things. If you look in terms of what Trump's attitude was towards NAFTA, for example, North American Free Trade Agreement with the Mexicans, he kind of bludgeoned them into submission and then got them to sign. And it's very clear that he's close to achieving the same thing with the Canadians.
Wow.
If you look in terms of what's going on with China, again, he gave them a bit of a public flogging at the UN, if you noticed, in terms of China, and accused them of meddling in his elections. But he has this trade war going on with China. People actually don't understand what the trade war is all about. The trade war, Trump is doing exactly what I would be doing in his position, because you have a trade imbalance. So think about it this way. Let's say China ends up slapping 25% tariffs on U.S. goods that they end up importing. And the U.S. does exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Now, the sheer volume of money that then flows into the U.S. as a direct result of those tariffs is significantly higher.
Mm-hmm.
So Trump ends up winning. So it is quid pro quo, and it's all above board. And Trump can then take the money that he gets from the tariffs, and he can then subsidize these farmers, which, again, is part of his constituency. And people don't get this.
Right. People underestimate how clean his logic is in some of the situations where a politician would trip themselves up. And that's
absolutely.
America always wanted. Remember, for years and years and years, in every election, they would always say, I wonder what a third-party candidate would look like. Well, now you got your answer, right?
Exactly. He has been messing up the narrative, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Look, people turn around and say, why is the American economy continuing to do so well when this guy's a disaster? Short answer is that he's not a disaster. He's actually doing very well.
These are outrageous opinions that you're expressing this morning. You know that there are people in mainstream media who are going to call you all kinds of things.
Yes, but generally, if I take economic advice from journalists, I first have a look at, are they rich journalists?
So it wasn't just your friend Donald Trump who was at the UN. Also, our Cyril Ramaphosa was there.
Oh, goodness, what an embarrassment.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. You know, actually, he had an opportunity to stand up out there and say, guys, look, South Africa's open for business. We are not stealing people's property, much as Trump might think that we are going to do that. All of that kind of stuff. Instead, he stood there and parroted the same line that we've been doing for the past 20 years about, make Mandela's mission proud and all of that kind of stuff. It was a wasted opportunity. Now, the guy was sitting across from Trump at the dinner table, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, oh, we just talked about golf. Really? You could not take like 20 seconds to say, Mr. Trump, I'd like to invite you for a state visit to South Africa so that you can actually clear up this misconception that we're stealing people's property.
Right.
I mean, how long does it take to say that?
Well,
what is that, about 10 seconds?
And what's your priority if you'd rather talk about golf? Really?
Exactly.
It's fairly obvious that some of the people at the top forget about the people at the bottom almost instantly. Let's not go down that greasy pole, though. Jacob Zuma made a flight I saw in the Sunday Times. A flight to Qatar. They called it a mysterious flight. Do we know anything about this? Do you, Canton?
Well, as usual, what I end up doing is trying to follow where the audit trail is in terms of money. Now, we've got a bit of a history with Qatar. I think the state visit from the Emir of Qatar out here was around about 2017, when the whole you remember the National Day of Protest was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so a state visit had been scheduled for the same day. And so Zuma suddenly shifted the state visit so that the emir flew in at night for the official start of the state visit so that right. he wouldn't be drawn into the protests. And Zuma had previously been there, I believe, in 2016, as I recall. And one of the things that he was, among the things that he was doing out there was he was following up on the South African investments that are in Qatar. So we have, PetroSA, for example, is invested in Qatar. We have Sasol has a gas to fuel facility that they invested in out there. But I remember at the time the discussions were around Qatar acquiring a significant stake in Denel.
Oh.
As in, yes.
Arms manufacturer.
And we all know about what the role of the Guptas was in terms of what was going on around Denel and their attempt to actually take control of Denel. So, and Qatar is a kind of an interesting position right now because there's a blockade going on against Qatar from the Saudis and from Bahrain and from the That's UAE, right. and Egypt is part of that as well. So I flew through Qatar back from Vienna about 2 weekends ago.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting that the way in which you get to Qatar from Europe is that you have to actually overfly Iraq and Iran because the UAE and the Saudis have denied overflight rights to the Qataris.
Wow.
So there's actually a fairly intense economic war going on in that neck of the woods. And the only reason why there hasn't been a military action against Qatar up to this point, my suspicion is that because the U.S. has a massive military base in Qatar.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Which makes it very unlikely that the Saudis, for example, would want to invade. So the Saudis cannot do a Yemen on Qatar. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So of course, what that means is that there's no extradition treaties between the UAE and Qatar. So what conclusion would one draw from that, given that the money was previously in Dubai? Has the money been moved out? Well, I don't know. It's a possibility. What do you think?
I think there are a lot of question marks there, and I'm interested to see where this leads. Does sound conspiratorial, though. I know that these are all facts on the ground, too, but the Middle East is so hard to read.
Yes, but connecting the dots is always kind of an interesting thing. All of those guys, of course, are basket cases from the point of view of human rights and democracy. But Qatar has got very good PR because obviously they have Al Jazeera, mm-hmm. and of course they're going to be hosting the World Cup. But their elections have been postponed year after year. The elections were supposed to be held in 2006. I believe they are now going to be scheduled. They've been moved to 2019, and they'll probably be moved yet again. So what is actually going on in terms of the Arabs fighting the Arabs? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But then how does Zuma fit into this?
Well,
fascinating stuff.
Yeah, he's a very mysterious man in so many ways. And then in other ways, he's just there right in front of you.
But the breach in protocol is... clearly something that should be getting Cyril worried. But then Cyril should be worried about so many things. All of the knives are within his party.
Yeah, low on his priority list, I would imagine.
Very much so.
All right.
By the way, just apropos of the SABC, there's one thing that I want to get in.
Yeah.
This whole concept of TV licenses is such an anachronism. It is so outrageous. The idea that you have an organization that is effectively devoting an entire section to going out and raising funds among the public. Look, they're going to be about as effective in terms of getting funds in as the ETOL guys are because, it's one of the ways in which they can actually be a passive protest. So I think we should actually have a campaign that says get rid of TV licenses completely and find other ways through the fiscus of actually funding public interest broadcasting.
Yeah, at least they'd have a function then, right?
Absolutely.
At least they'd have some purpose. And as you said at the beginning of this discussion, you know, there are things that they can sell off to save themselves. All right. I thank you very much, Canton Pillay. It's very nice to talk to you, sir. And we will catch up again soon, no doubt. The Burning Platform on cliffcentral.com. It's brought to you by Nando's.
This is cliffcentral.com.